Welcome to West Virginia Beer Roads, a podcast all about beer from a West Virginia perspective. I'm Charles Bockway. Today we're visiting at Summit Beer Station in downtown Huntington, West Virginia. We'll be out in the beer garden, so if you hear some extraneous noises, you know why. So let's go live now to that. And joining me today is West Virginia Beer Roads co-host Aaron McCoy. Aaron, how's it going?
It's going really well. It's been quite a while since we've been here, and I am excited to be back at Summit. I'm ready to have a beer, but I think today we're probably discussing the biggest news to come out of Summit Beer Station, really since it opened up years ago.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. And as always, on our podcast visits to Summit Beer Station, we have with us the founder and proprietor of Summit, Jeff McKay.
Jeff, welcome to West Virginia Beer Roads.
Thanks, guys. Glad to be here.
Well, I guess I could say the cat's out of the bag, Jeff. And a lot of folks have been quite surprised to hear that you've decided to sell Summit and run off on a new adventure.
Yeah, Charles, you're absolutely correct. I have decided to let go of Summit, and we are now passing it on to my manager, Josh Steffi. So we're, over the next year, going to make that a reality.
And what will you be doing?
That's the million-dollar question. At the moment, I've been telling people I'm semi-retired.
I definitely agree. It's a new era, I think. A new chapter. I'm not sure how you want to say that, but definitely something in those terms.
Yeah, I guess for me, I never really wanted to be the face of it anyway. So that part of it's been easy, right? But yeah, you're absolutely correct.
Well, I need to mention before we get too deep into this interview that Aaron and I are tasting some beers from the Summit Taps. Aaron, you want to introduce what you're drinking today?
I am drinking from New Trail Brewing Company out of Williamsport, Pennsylvania, Rained Out, which is a DIPA. It's a 9% kind of sweet, but very smooth and easy to drink IPA.
And I'm the lightweight here. I have one of my standard drinks at Summit Beer Station, and that's the Goffel Kolsch. And whenever they have that, I love to try that beer. Well, let's get back to today's topic, and we're going to get some details on the changes ahead and also do some reminiscing. So first, Jeff, let's talk more about the sale, like the timeline and maybe a few details of the sale.
Yeah, it was really born out of the trip I take annually to Belgium. So I typically take somebody with me every year, and oftentimes it's staff. And this past year, I brought Josh Steffi, manager, with me, and felt now's the time for him to understand the culture and see it firsthand. And I've got some good friends that I like to hang out with in Belgium, and I always chat about how at some point I want to make a break and move to Belgium. And one of our last nights there, I guess after enough beers, Josh approached me and he said, "Hey, listen, I've been talking to my wife, Nicole, and we think that if you are leaving, that we'd love to take over the business." And initially I felt, no, absolutely not. I'm too controlling. There's no way I can let go of this. And you know what? A few months later, I felt this is not a bad idea. I'm not getting any younger, but so we're going to work with him over the next year to, I guess, pass on that institutional knowledge and hopefully set him up for success.
Well, how long has Josh Steffi been your bar manager?
Oh, that's a good question. Let's think about this chronologically, I guess. So he came on during the pandemic. I hired several more people to kind of compensate for outdoor dining. And he worked his way up. And I'm going to say probably close to 2 years now. Okay. So he's got a a good understanding of the operations.
Mm-hmm, right.
Well, exactly. And I'm sure you wouldn't have Steffi as your manager, nor would you be willing to sell the place to him if you didn't think he was a good fit with Summit. So I'm curious to hear how you would describe his strong suits and talents, things that will help him in this new role of becoming Summit's new owner.
Yeah, I could not have let it go to somebody I didn't know, right? Or somebody who I didn't think shared the same passion or the same attention to detail. Josh has always been an employee who was self-motivated, saw the details of the business. Oftentimes, I wouldn't even have to tell him what to do, which, as any business owner will tell you, is worth its weight in gold.
Absolutely.
And I think additionally, he showed an interest in the culture, and for me, that's probably 60% of the business is selling the culture. I mean, it's one thing to come down here and just drink a beer to drink a beer, but it's another to have the basis of the business being the culture that comes with the beer you're drinking, the understanding of why this beer is important. And so taking him to Belgium and showing that to him first and foremost, maybe the light bulb went off. Things clicked.
Sure.
He got it. He had his epiphany, I guess.
Well, with you gone, it will surely be a new era for Summit Beer Station. And in some respects, I'm sure it will be different here. But we'll promise here at West Virginia Beer Roads to give Steffi our support and to help him keep Summit in the top echelon of American craft beer bars.
Yeah, we'll definitely plan to get with him later this summer and hear all about his plans for the place.
Yeah. Full disclosure, he is camera shy and shy of microphones as well. So you're going to have to work with him, guys.
This might be more of a Brilliant Stream written article than a podcast. I don't know.
A funny little quip here. Right before he bought into the business, one of the local news stations contacted me to add a little line or two to a segment they were doing. And I said, Josh, this is your time to shine.
And?
He did it.
So, Jeff, we've been hearing that you may be moving to Belgium. It's got to be a huge decision to move to another country. What things would drive you to 100% pull that trigger to make that move?
Oh, I kind of want to preface by saying that I think the end game was always to move over there. I don't want to say it's set in stone, but that's the path that I'm certainly going down. Really my motivation is purely culturally based. I'm a sociologist. I mean, I would be a very bad, terrible, horrible sociologist if that was not.
No, he's not lying. He's taught sociology at Marshall University.
Yeah, right? For the last dozen years or so. I know that the comment is normally, oh, you're just going to Belgium because of the beer. Well, yeah, that's an important part, but that's not the whole story. But
yeah.
Just working my way there, I suppose.
All right, so that kind of leads into another question, like, is this a trial thing? Is it permanent? You know, what are you thinking in terms of your future there?
So, I don't want to claim too many specifics because it's really amorphous at the moment. I have my heart set on living in Flanders somewhere. Whether it be Antwerp, whether it be Ypres, whether it be Ghent or Bruges, it's all good with me. The crux of it is finding work, right? So
right.
I've been reaching out to breweries and reached out to Van Steenberg of Golden Drock and Pirat fame and St. Bernardus, and I'd love to have some sort of business administration role, whether it be HR or something similar. So I don't think that I'm going to make the move before having a job, but it would have to be a pretty dire situation otherwise.
Well, Jeff, we've sat in this bar several times in recent years and discussed our appreciation for Belgian beers and Belgian beer culture. Anyone visiting Summit Beer Station can see your interest in Belgian beer just by looking at your tap list. And so we're going to sample one of those Belgian brews with you right now, Jeff. Would you describe the beer for us?
Well, off camera or off the microphone, I guess I told Charles that he needs to be able to guess this beer.
Oh, no.
And he did say that. He's calling him out.
My one hint to Charles is he's been to this brewery.
Ah.
But this is a Saison from the southern part of Belgium in Wallonia. And it is a spring seasonal, although we're kind of leaving that.
Just barely.
So it's we don't necessarily have the flower that exists that's in this beer, but it's similar to honeysuckle.
Oh yeah.
So
So it's a native flower to Belgium, and really that's the most comparable flower. We
well,
have here.
From that description, I hear Danny Prignon in this beer.
You would be right. It's actually a reimagined version of his Spring Spiritus. You know how Danny is that no one beer is ever the same. Yes. So
well, he likes those dandelion beers in the spring and things.
And this is a top five Fantôme bottle for me and.
This is delicious.
This is the only place in West Virginia you'll be able to get this.
Yeah, so Fantôme New Spring Spiritus is the official name.
Yes, and for me, it really encapsulates everything I love about Belgian brewing culture and really Belgian culture in and of itself. I don't know, what would you even describe Danny as? Enigmatic? Mad scientist,
a bit eccentric, yes.
Yeah, and for me, it showcases the kind of, no pun intended, the spirit of Belgian culture.
Sure.
And Danny has this connection to the place that he brews in, the local fauna and flora, to me, this is Belgium.
Mm-hmm. This is a beautiful beer too.
It is a beautiful beer, and all of the honeysuckle.
Yeah, and as officially, it's not technically anyway summer yet. This is a great spring beer for us in West Virginia.
Absolutely, and again, as Jeff said, if you want it, come to Summit.
Well, I hate to tell your listeners, I just bought the last one. But there's other Fantôme bottles available.
Yeah, Fantôme, what a fantastic little farmhouse brewery, very tiny, and I guess, he makes a lot of beer, but he's a tiny place.
Yeah, it's at Danny's whim, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Appreciate it, man. It's great. Yeah,
it is great. Thank you. It is a beautiful beer. Well, when we talk about Belgian beer variety, it's quite different from the beer in England or Germany, the places where we Americans have historically gotten most of our beer culture. So what are a few things that stand out to you as making Belgian beers unique?
It's kind of the breadth and depth of beer styles. And I don't know that many people are aware or know how hyper-regional, hyper-local some of these beer styles are. And for me, there's just something really romantic about that. And it's reflective in all of Belgium, I think, because I can go from one town to the next in West Flanders and they drink different beers. They have a different local brewery. I can be at to Molenhof right outside of Kortrijk and drink Rodenbach Classic like it's the local pils. Or I can go to Brussels and everybody's drinking Terrace Bulba, one of the world's best session beers. Or I can go to the southern part of Belgium and drink Bier de Garde and Saison or go to Antwerp and drink a Bollica.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good to let Americans know that it's not quite like here. I mean, we may have little breweries in different towns that make slightly different beers, but basically they're making a lot of the same beer styles that are popular.
And, yeah, and I think kind of the missing element of Belgian beer culture that most people certainly don't know is that it's still Pilsner country.
I mean, I guess in the popular overall market, right?
Yeah, but there are very hyper-regional Pilsners that don't see the light of day outside of their local markets, like Riedor Pils from Brasserie du Pont. That's a fantastic Pilsner, but don't get credit for it. Or Bavik Super Pils from De Brabander. To me, it's the breadth and the depth of the styles. I even love Belgian Pilsner.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it, there's something in there in all these, often anyway, in many Belgian styles. It's got that little different stay, you know, thing that, like, we call it the Belgian yeast if you really don't know more what to say. But it's there isn't one Belgian yeast, right?
Right. And most of the breweries that are popular or well known, their claim to fame is their yeast strain. There's lineage there, right? And the Westmalle strain is used for I don't know how many different styles of beer. The original Trappist yeast is reportedly from Chimay. That Rodenbach is effectively responsible for much of the Flemish sour red brown beers, and De Dalle, their yeast strain is somehow related to it. I really don't want to belabor the point, but for me, it's like this romantic feeling of there. This is more than just the beer. There's culture. There's art. There's science. There's connectivity to the local area, and I just love that.
Exactly. And that kind of falls into my follow-up with that. And, you know, we talked about the Belgian beer culture that you like and why you like it, but just like their overall culture, you've touched on a little bit. What else is attractive to you for being in that area?
Oh, I think it's a thread that's woven through everything, right? It's not just beer. I mean, it's the attention to detail in the service industry itself. It's the attention to detail in the food that they serve. The food in Belgium is severely underrated. I don't think people realize how many like Michelin-rated restaurants are in Belgium, and the care that's taken in most everything that they do. And there's a directness to Belgian culture that I love. If you do something wrong, you're going to know. If you do something right, you're going to know. If you have spinach in your teeth, somebody's going to tell you. And I love the directness. There's nothing fake about them, right?
Right.
And whereas if we're just looking at the service industry in the U.S., that it's a performance, that it's we're oftentimes pretending to be happy, pretending to be excited.
Yeah. Right.
And in Belgium, there's effectively a trade school for serving, and most are certified in that. So every time I come back home, I feel so re-energized.
For certification.
It's like watching a ballet, a symphony happen, going to any cafe in Brussels or Antwerp or Bruges and just watching it all play out. It's so different from what we're used to here in the U.S.
Well, I remember years back when I was first hearing about you and your new beer bar here in Huntington, which at the time was located over in Heritage Station, that's about four blocks from here, something like that. I was still in the early days of writing my beer blog, and I was curious to see what this young guy in Huntington was up to. And when I first visited, I was immediately impressed. I mean, I'm honest, that it was impressive what you were doing in this tiny little space, not hardly big enough to whip a cat in, but you sure had some good, you had good taps. So I'd love for you to talk for a minute about your original bar and how it got started.
Oh, this really goes back more than just a dozen years or so that Summit's been in business. Again, as a sociologist, I'm just enamored in learning about other cultures and immersing myself in that. I don't know how or why, but I fell into beer and immediately connected with European beer. Specifically, because there was a story to tell with these beers, whereas the American craft beer market at the time was very young, and There was no such thing as New England IPA, and so we didn't have these hyper-regional styles yet. So it was very easy for me to lean into that. And as I was in college, I would travel to Louisville, travel to Asheville, travel to Portland, Oregon, and in many ways be upset when I came back home and that I didn't have access to what I thought I should have access to. The short story of it is that really the only reason I was in Portland, Oregon at the time is that I had every intention of moving there.
No kidding. You really were serious about Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, and I see this Facebook memory pop up every year where I bought a one-way ticket for myself on my birthday because I was...
That was the plan.
Because I was leaving.
Yeah.
Wow. And for all the listeners, it wasn't just because of the beer, by the way. But the serendipitous nature of it all is that as I was graduating, a position opened up at Marshall. As I was graduating grad school, by the way, and a position opened up, and I needed to find work before moving, and I thought, what the hell, I'll apply. Well, much to my surprise, I was hired, literally within days of that, the airline that I purchased that ticket through left Tri-State Airport.
So
well, I guess I'm staying. So as I was I guess
karma.
Finding yeah yeah and so I kind of leaned into that serendipity, and the first few months I was working at Marshall, I just like became increasingly frustrated, and so I got connected with Blaine Crabtree over at Bottle and Wedge, if everybody remembers.
Yeah, that was a bottle shop that was located also over in that Heritage Station area, right?
Yeah, and I used to walk down there all the time just to chat with Blaine, because here's somebody else that seems to care as much as I do about this. And he happened to know Thomas McChesney, no longer lives here, but was involved in kind of locating talent for Heritage Station. And Blaine knew that I had, I guess, somewhat of an aspiration of opening up a beer bar, and got connected with Thomas, and Thomas showed me this spot, and I probably didn't put enough thought into it, but I just said, yes, I'll take it, all 450 square feet of it. And I called my parents, and I said, hey, I just signed a lease to open up a bar at Heritage Station, can you help me? And I'm sure my parents thought I was crazy, but to kind of button all of it up, I had no money at the time. I had just paid off my student loans, and so what? Any good? How old was I? 24-year-old. I took out 5 credit cards.
Oh yeah.
and use the interest-free rates for a year and a half.
Yeah.
And built out the bar ourselves, adding the mezzanine.
Yeah, you know, that Heritage Station area, I remember back when that was turned into a restaurant and bar there. Carrie Harrison, the Harrison family, was so important to getting that established, that location, Heritage Station. And you took it, of course, they had probably gone on from that by the time you opened your place there. And it was such a tiny little space, but I think you learned a lot of lessons as a craft beer publican working there. And so I'd love you to just kind of express some of those thoughts on what you learned there that propelled you to your next step in the beer career.
Yeah, all of that was learned on the fly. I tell people that I didn't even really know how to run the business until the pandemic, and much of that is kind of true. But when we were at Heritage Station, and I can't, in hindsight, I can't believe I was even doing this. I was working full-time at Marshall and literally walking from my office every day after work to go bartend until midnight, Monday through Thursday, every single week. Hey. I can't even imagine doing that now.
Yeah, when I was a college student, I wouldn't have minded having a bartending or a beer bar guy for a professor. That would have been fun.
That's like, right. You know, to have you know all the energy.
What's very funny about that statement is, and I'll not name any names for fear of embarrassing anybody, but there's a bartender at Fife Street that was one of my students at the time, and he confided in me a couple years ago about how lame he thought it was that I owned a bar and taught on campus. And he said, well, look at me now. I'm working at a brewery. I said, well, I guess I did one thing right while I was in the classroom.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, I learned all that stuff on the fly in terms of pricing, in terms of customer service. I mean, I had no experience. I really had no business opening the bar.
And it must have been a positive enough experience that led you to move to, you know, bigger place and better things.
Yeah, for me, and maybe it's a, I don't know, personality flaw, and that I'm very self-motivated, and I don't want this to sound self-congratulatory, by the way, but nobody was going to stop me from doing it.
You're going to do it.
Yeah, and there's a selfishness to it that I very much recognize, but nobody was going to stop me, and I was going to make it work. And really, any time I heard somebody walk in and say, oh, this will never last or this will never work, I can't believe you're not serving Bud Light or any number of other beers, that was just motivation for me.
Yeah, I know you're a betting guy, and I tell you, you made the right bet.
Yes.
Absolutely. So, Jeff, what year did you move to the current Summit location, and how did that come about?
Oh, I feel like this is a question that's asked to me very often, and those first few years were such a blur that I feel like I answer this question different every time. But my recollection is July of 2018.
Okay.
Am I thinking about this right? Maybe 17. Right around that area.
Okay, that's fair.
Within a year, and it couldn't have come soon enough. I was ready to move by that point.
Well, yeah. I mean, other than being able to seat more customers, what did the move to the bigger space allow you to actually do?
Yeah, what's funny about that is, for probably every bit of a year or two. Once this space became vacant, it was a pretty frequent conversation with staff about this space would be perfect for a bar. And Gary and Beckett Ward approached me just out of nowhere one night, and it didn't take much convincing to say, yes, let's do this.
Well, the other significant beer-related activity in Huntington that you were involved in is the Rails and Ales Craft Beer Festival. With you leaving town, possibly, permanently, who knows, who will be taking over your role in terms of organizing the beer for the festival?
Yeah, I think that the festival is really going to be more of the same. I don't want to speak to too much because I'm not involved anymore, but Blaine Crabtree, who owned Bottle and Wedge, has been with Rails and Ales since day one with me, and he's still with it, and Jay Fox, who brews over at the Peddler, still
sure.
involved, so those two have all the institutional knowledge to pull off a successful festival.
So you're saying it should not miss a beat?
It shouldn't miss a beat.
Good.
Well, I want us to talk a bit about your key staff people through the years. The ones that have meant so much to Summit's success. Why don't you start with a few staff remembrances from the early days at the original location?
Yeah, I think it's a point that certainly has to be made, is that we're not in this moment, we're not in this point at all without much of the staff that we've had over the years. And just to throw a little statistic at you, our retention rate at Summit was something like 80% over the last 12 years. More often than not, that once somebody came on board, we kept them and trained them up and became part of the process. Like, fully invested. And so right out of the gate the original location, Ashley Skeen, who at the time worked at SIP, I I poached her.
You poached her from Sip, and Sip's another restaurant and a wine bar next door.
Well, even funnier.
Next door to where you are now.
Yes. Well, Sip was there a few months before we were, so it was a complimentary relationship. But Ashley came on board, and so did Shane Bryant, who also worked at Sip at the time as well.
Two for one.
And so. Outside of that, I had a good friend, Lindsay Heineman, who I met through grad school. She was in the same department as me, same major, all of that, and brought her on board because she was in love with beer as well. Came from Chicago area and was well accustomed to good beer. So we were rough around the edges to start, and by the end of it, we're a well-oiled machine.
It's awesome.
Yeah, and once you moved to the current location, some of your staff that were like Ashley and others that were probably working for you at the original location moved over here to the new location, right?
Yeah. Shortly after Shane and Ashley came on, I brought on Mandy Cunningham, and I would say within the year. And those three I convinced to stay with us.
Yeah,
Things are only going to get better. Additionally, I hired John Howell, who still works with us, and
there you go.
Has been there ever since.
Good bartender.
Yeah, the last decade or so now.
Yeah, we love John.
And Katrina Richards, Katrina Richards came with me as well, and she's now moved to Louisville and works in the industry as well.
Yeah, I mean, good staff like that are so important. The folks that are loyal to you, as long as they were here, certainly, and some of them were long term. And hey, now. Now Ashley and Mandy are have a business together, I guess, and they still sell beer over there a little bit. It's a bookstore, though, in Barbersville, and I've stopped over there a number of times to visit them.
I think really what I'm most proud of is not any singular accomplishment at Summit or working with the legislature or annoying the ABCA. It's the kind of career path that many of our employees have taken, so... Ashley and Mandy moved on and opened up their own business and opened up Booktenders and effectively stayed in the industry. Aaron, who came on a couple years after we opened, now owns Tulsi.
Right. Shane. Right. That's another like a food store in the in the downtown, like a Whole Foods or not a Whole Foods. What do you call it? Like more
a health food store.
Health food store. Sure.
So she opened up her own business, and Shane moved to Louisville and works in the beer industry. Katrina moved to Louisville and works in the beer industry. Lindsay moved to Louisville and works in the industry.
It's like little flowers blossoming.
And
I love that.
I'm really happy about that.
Yeah,
that,
of course.
That particular point. Yeah.
Well, while we're reminiscing, let's talk about that cadre of regular customers who've supported Summit through the years. You've got some really interesting characters, right?
Yeah, and it's what's funny is I feel like we lost some people when we moved over here. It's like the dirty little secret. Where did you guys go? But no, we've had a good core group of people. When I started the bar, I felt that it needed to be a third place, and so in sociology and urban planning, all this other stuff, there's the idea that you need a place from work that's not work and it's not home. And so every Friday I would organize a little get together for us to all share beers over at the original location. And we kind of, that has not stopped. 12 years later now.
Wow.
And many of the regulars that were with us during those, little bottle shares are still here.
That's really cool.
People who are new to coming to Summit and know me kind of remark that, holy crap, there are people here that are practically the furniture. and they are always here. And I really love that aspect of it.
Sure.
That's more important than the beer. That's more important than making all the money in the world. I want a place for people to hang out and feel safe in.
Well, most bars that have been around for a decade or more have seen their share of shenanigans at their places. Oh, if the walls could talk, you know. In that vein, what are some of your favorite memories, stories, or just plain craziness that you've witnessed here during your decade or so as a publican?
Oh, like any good bar owner, many of these stories are gross.
I don't know if there's one that's maybe halfway clean.
I think one lasting memory I have of the original location is that maybe 2 weeks before we were moving, we did an event with Founders for KBS Day, and literally every stool was just falling apart as the day went on. I was throwing away bar stools left and right, and like, thank God we're moving soon. and then the glass rinser died, and it felt like the world was collapsing on us. But we were moving over to the shiny new digs over here at current location. As far as shenanigans, I mean, most of it is here at the current location, just for the sheer fact that we're more centrally located and more it's apparent that we exist.
Present.
Yeah. And I think one of my favorite memories, and it's a bit gross, but literally the first weekend that we were open, I was helping Katrina and John work a Friday night, and I'd been here all day, 12, 13 hours, whatever, and I said, guys, I gotta go. I'm going home. Katrina texted me, and she said, somebody shook a turd out of their pants in the hallway. I said, well, welcome to the bar industry, because you're going to see more of that. There was more of that to come. I don't want to paint the picture that this is a gross place.
No, this is kind of a high-end, nice bar, you know.
Fortunately, that behavior happens.
Yeah, well, everything from stealing signs out of the bathroom to people jumping the fence to... Literally every single piece of the beer garden has had something nefarious happen in it.
Well, it all sounds like great memories and fun times.
Yeah, I mean, in the moment it's not fun, but it's fun to laugh about now.
Reminisce on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Jeff, as we know, you don't make beer here, so you have to get what you sell from either beer distributors or West Virginia breweries. I'd like for you to look back over the years and talk about a few of the people at beer distributors or breweries that have been especially helpful to you in getting the beers that you want.
Yeah, I would be making a huge mistake if I did not mention Atomic in this, and specifically Petey. So Petey, he's since passed, and it's his...
Atomic Distributing Company, right?
Yeah. Correct,
that's
yeah.
The beer distributor here in Huntington.
Local distributor, now Thundering Beverage. But it's tough to look back on, because Petey was just like so integral in our own success. And so right out of the gate, before we had even opened up, Petey was helping me with... installing shanks and taps and putting the walk-in cooler together, and had just signed a franchise agreement with Global Beer Network, so it was just a perfect storm for me in that they were wanting to launch these brands and specifically on draft, and within our first week we were launching Goulden's Rock and Pirat and Petrus H. Wow. Pell and all of these classic Belgian beers. And to me, that was wow.
Like, sure.
I'm doing what I set out to do just within a week. And Petey was instrumental in that. And Global Beer Network, the rep at the time, Pete Larson, he's since retired, but instrumental and elevating the Belgian beer game in West Virginia. Before opening up the bar, reached out to Global Beer Network. I said, how do I get these beers here? Your list of beers is longer than every beer that's available in West Virginia. And how do I get these here? And credit to Pete Larson. He called me, and I'm just a guy. He called me, he said, I'm coming to West Virginia. Let's meet up. Let's go get dinner.
Wow.
And so I met That's up with awesome. Him and kind of explained my vision to him. And he says, you got to do it. So I need no more convincing.
Sure.
And so for me, that was the moment, like, this is going to work. And so I started working on other wholesalers and convincing them to get involved in this. Josh Holland was then working at Spriggs, and we got La Trappe into West Virginia. We got, although not available anymore, Earthel out of the Netherlands. Fantastic beers from De Proof, and Josh is an old school beer guy like me, and that was easy.
Yeah, Josh Holland, who is now
Country Boy
with
rep.
Country Boy,
right,
yes,
right.
out of Kentucky.
And then Kathy Folio at North Central.
Kathy, yeah. God rest her soul.
Kathy was amazing for us. And
yeah, I mean, there's so many beers here I see that I know come from, that's North Central distributors.
Yeah, and I feel that Kathy doesn't get enough credit for that, because I would sit on the phone with her for an hour and a half, 2 hours, just going through this massive list of beers that were available to them from Total Beverage and now gone. Van Bergen DeWolf, which is now gone. But we were bringing in Detroque Lambic. We were bringing in all these incredible Belgian beers and working on Duvel and getting here and convincing them to invest in MDV, Merchant Duvin, and Rochefort and Orval and Westmalle, all these beers. And it really sets a stage for us. Like, there weren't very many places in West Virginia, really, you know, outside of Apothecary, that were trying to do this.
Right.
And I said, I want to lean into this as much as I can. And right out of the gate, all those distributors, all those wholesalers have been so beneficial to us over the years. And I'm not even going to begin to go through the list of people since then. And it's a mile long. I'm so thankful for all of them, because it's brought me to Belgium. They've allowed me to make connections with these breweries, and without them, that none of that was possible.
And I love it too that, and you'd hear this from the distributors, that, you know, McKay, he pushes us to get these beers. These were not beers they would normally, oftentimes, not all, but some, they would have never brought in if it wasn't for Jeff McKay.
Yeah. I don't want to take too
That's
much
true.
Credit.
That's true.
I'll take your word for it, but I just wanted the beers. That's all that was important to me. I wanted to expose people to these beers get it in front of people, because I felt that if I got it in front of people and I told the story, that they would get it. That yes, the beers are great. They're world class, but there's so much more to it. And there are reps now that say that I train them up, and I don't know if that's true or not, but I hope that I've elevated everybody's understanding, I suppose.
Well, let's get into the other side of, maybe, is there anybody else, any local government officials or other local business people or family members or friends who you'd like to thank for their support or help along the way?
Yeah, I think I'd be doing the West Virginia beer scene a disservice if I didn't give just a massive shout out to a lot of people. I can remember, and I talked to Bill Rittenauer about this every once in a while, about how I would literally drive to his house to go pick up kegs to bring back to Huntington. And Bill was just so receptive to the idea at the time. And Steve Delatoso at Mountain State.
Mountain State, right.
And I did them real dirty and convinced them to fill casks for me. And I was buying pins and firkins and taking them up to Thomas.
Okay.
And, like, fill these casks up for me. And I would drive all the way up to Thomas and pick up the casks and then go down to Morgantown and stop by Bill. And
those are not short drives from Huntington. I mean, those are multiple hour drives from here.
No offense to these guys now, but I wouldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
But I was so motivated at the time that I was frustrated. I cannot get your beers down here, and I'm going to go get them. And I did that very frequently the first couple years. And then I guess in more recent history, I mean, Sam Fonda over at Weather Ground and Mike at Abolitionist and certainly Jay over at Peddler and Noah and Jason at Kerber. I mean, I can go on and on and on.
Sure.
Ross at Bad Shepherd and Short Story Guys. And they've been so immensely helpful. And really outside of the industry, there's just a plethora of politicians I could rattle off, but like Delegate Young, Kayla Young in Charleston, and Sean Hornbuckle here locally, and Mike Wolfel, it all been instrumental in these really insurmountable, seemingly insurmountable issues that we have with small businesses in West Virginia, and we've worked like hell to help out bars and restaurants and the service industry here. So I hope I'm not missing anybody, but none of this was possible without all of these people.
Yeah, it takes village for everything. Like
absolutely, and like, I know I'm probably the most annoying person. They don't want to see my text messages or calls.
Persistence.
But I mean, you're not going to tell me what to do, right?
Right.
And I have oppositional defiance. So when I find out some sort of code or law or ordinance that I don't think is just or fair, I'll be damned if I let that continue on.
Well, Jeff, I think I can speak for the entire Brilliant Stream community when I say thank you for your work and dedication, for everything you've done to enhance craft beer appreciation in our little part or little region of the world. I kind of go back to an article I wrote back in October 2014 after I visited your place back then, and even though it was a kind of nascent and early days of the development of your beer style and all that, I wrote this about it. Summit Beer Station in Huntington, West Virginia is an innovator, an advocate, an educator, and an entertainer. It's really hard to say in which role it has been the most significant actor. So those are things that I can't say about most bars or any other probably bars in West Virginia that cover all those bases. I mean, you've done so much, like I said, to enhance the craft beer appreciation in our little region of the world. It's meant so much to me and so much to many others. You'll be missed I'll tell you, as no longer being in this business, you'll be missed. And we love you, brother.
Thank you, guys. That's too kind.
I echo Charles's words of appreciation and gratitude. Thank you for your dedication to the craft beer community and, more importantly, helping to get it more widely available here in West Virginia. You've truly left your mark here, and obviously we wish you nothing but the best as you write your next chapter.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, anything you want to say before we wrap up? Any final comments as we wrap up this podcast?
I guess to summarize everything is that I never really set out to do anything spectacular. I never really set out to, change the game, so to speak, or get any attention. I'm more of a man behind the curtain, man in the shadows. I like working best in the shadows, and I don't typically like to be on camera or speaking a microphone. I'm fully comfortable doing it, trust me, but I all of this was just born out of doing something better. I mentioned this a few years ago to some folks at Marshall when I was asked for my, I guess, I don't say expertise, but my input on why I stayed and continued to do what I did. And I don't have low expectations, and I want to hold myself to a high standard, and I want that to be reflective in Summit, and I want it to be reflective in Rails and L's, and I didn't need the superlatives, I didn't need the awards, I didn't need this, that, and the other thing. I just wanted to get good beer in front of people and sell the culture to them. And I hope that I was successful at that. And really, that's most important to me.
I definitely think you've succeeded in that.
I would agree, 100%. Yeah. And cheers, Jeff. That's quite an accomplishment.
Thank you, guys.
So for Charles Bakway and Aaron McCoy, along with Jeff McKay at Summit Beer Station in Huntington, West Virginia, we're signing off of the West Virginia Beer Roads podcast today.
That's right. Thank you for your time, and we look forward to seeing what someone's doing in the future.
Thank you, guys.
This brings us to the close of another podcast. Remember, you can subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast host. Thank you for listening to West Virginia Beer Roads.
West Virginia Beer Roads is a production of BrilliantStream.com.